Good morning. My name is Michelle Williams, and I'm currently a PhD student at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. My area of research is cancer prevention and also global health and women's studies. Today I'm presenting a project that's part of a project called the Stress Coping and Depression Prevention and Education Project that was conducted at the University of South Carolina, and all those names are part of the SCOPE team. And the title of the presentation I'm giving today is The Utilization of Campus Resources Among Black Female Graduate Students. And I have no financial relationships to disclose. So, as we've been talking about this morning, clearly African American women experience very high levels of distress, but African American graduate students are supposed to have even more stress because of the status of being a graduate student, in addition to other daily stresses that African American women face. So these are just some of the typical stressors experienced by Black women, including, of course, balancing work demands, home life demands, and this is going to be very significant for our study because we found that a lot of our graduate students had children. Healing from adverse events, managing personal relationships, nurturing identity development, and of course creating a purpose in life. Again, very significant for people in graduate school. So in addition, the study was conducted at the University of South Carolina, which is a predominantly white institution. And previous studies of graduate students, African American graduate students, have found that African American graduate students at predominantly white institutions have higher levels of cultural and social isolation. And then they also tend to have difficulty in social, academic, and psychological adjustment. And the minority stress model just basically shows how different stressors based on minority status, including race, and for this population as well, gender. And although we didn't ask the question about sexual orientation, of course that can be an added stressor if you're a sexual minority. It can all lead to positive or negative health, mental health outcomes, and of course physiological outcomes as well. Now we're interested in looking at mental health service utilization on campuses. So there's some sources of support and assistance on different university campuses, and those include women's centers, multicultural centers, which can be a place to foster and cultural inclusion, as opposed to, again, I've talked about the fact that a lot of minorities at predominantly white institutions have cultural isolation. Counseling and health services, cultural programs, student activities, such as this project was sponsored by the Black Graduate Student Association, so that's the type of student activity that can foster, again, that cultural inclusion, and then educational equity academic support programs. So again, this study was part of a larger study that was done, the SCOPE project, and the primary objective of that project was to identify ways to reduce Black graduate students' barriers to mental health services. So additional project objectives included increasing Black students' understanding of their rights and increasing their understanding of procedures for handling perceived stressful situations related to family, racism, and other objective situations. And a little bit more about the SCOPE project, we not only surveyed Black female graduate students, we actually surveyed Black graduate students, including male students, and white students, all students, but we only had a few Hispanic and I think like one Native American who actually completed the survey. And then we also surveyed undergraduates at the University of South Carolina and then also at a historically Black college to be able to compare those populations as well. But again, this is just focusing on the Black female graduate students. And this is the model, the theoretical framework that the SCOPE survey was based on, the behavioral model of health services utilization. Again, whether or not they're perceiving comfort in using health services is going to lead to them actually using it if they are in a state of distress. So the objectives for this analysis that we did was to assess Black female graduate students' experience of psychological distress, so determine whether or not they're actually experiencing distress. Then to assess Black female graduate students' use of campus counseling services, and then to assess their use of other campus resources, like we mentioned before, some of the other sources that can be used to help cope. And what we did for the graduate student portion is we developed an internet-based survey and we administered it to all the graduate students, well, gave access to all the graduate students on campus. And we had over 500 students total complete the survey. And this analysis is based on 85 black graduate females who completed the survey. So the survey contained basic demographic characteristics, alcohol and drug use history, psychological well-being, experiences of discrimination, and use of campus resources. And this particular analysis is just going to focus on the psychological well-being and the campus use of campus resources. So this is the scale that we use to measure psychological distress, the Mental Health Inventory 5, which is basically five questions that previous studies have shown to be a valid way of assessing psychological distress. We'll talk a little bit more about that at the end. And it's just a basic Likert type scale survey. These are the items that they asked about: being happy, feeling calm and peaceful, feeling nervous, feeling downhearted and blue, or feeling so down in the dumps nothing could cheer you up. And then we asked five questions to assess the students' use of campus resources. So one of the questions was, I feel as though I know where to go if I have academic conflict or concern with a professor, because that's a major source of stress for some students. And I know I'm currently at the University of Alabama in Birmingham, and we're actually considering developing a system of reporting. So like if you're having a conflict with your advisor, you can report that and have a third party come in and actually mediate that. So that's interesting. Also, we asked them whether or not they feel comfortable going to Counseling Human Development Center to help them if they feel social, emotional, psychological, and cognitive well-being. In addition, we asked them whether or not there's a campus department that promotes an accepting environment for them, because I know having taught at universities for several years, if sometimes students won't go to counseling services if they have problems, but perhaps they have a connection with someone in a specific department. So we asked that question. Also, feel the university environment safe, peaceful, and accessible for all? And then you feel that there's opportunity for mentorship networking with faculty, staff that understand me as a person. So these are demographic characteristics of African-American females that completed the survey. As you can see, and this has kind of surprised me even though I'm in this category, the mean age was 34, a little over 34, and I was very interested in seeing when I did compare this to the larger group of white females who completed, it was actually no difference in age. And that was very surprising to me, especially seeing some of the students who were 50 and older, and it was the same for both blacks and whites. And although 47% did not specify their degree level, whether or not they're certificate students, master's students, or doctoral students, we know that they're doctoral students, know that they're graduate students, because that's the only people who had access to the survey. And then 63% were not married, and again, this is one thing that I was kind of interested in, is the fact that the mean number of children was two children, and 35% said that they actually have children. So some women had like three, four, some had five children. That's a lot. I don't have kids, so that's a lot to me. All right, so these are some of the results that we found. Whether or not they feel comfortable going to counseling services. Now, as you can see, only 35% said that they agree or strongly agree that they feel comfortable actually going to counseling services. So that's a very interesting thing. And again, one of the reasons why we wanted to kind of assess this is whether or not students are using the services and what can be done to increase utilization, especially if they're having high levels of distress. So only 35% are comfortable, strongly agree that they're comfortable using campus services. And I was very surprised to see that 20% disagreed or strongly disagreed, saying that they feel comfortable going. So the results of the question that said, you feel as though you know where to go if you have an academic concern or conflict with a professor, 54% said that they strongly agree that they feel that they know where to go. And again, that's very significant because as a graduate student, I'm sure everyone has understanding, and you know, it's very difficult if you have a conflict, especially if this is like your major professor, you need to know where to go. So again, this is providing us information of how to develop interventions that can help people find sources of support when they are in these situations. Okay, the next one. I feel I feel there is a campus department that promotes an accepting environment for me and a diverse student population. And as you can see, only 32% of there's this particular department that they feel promotes an accepting environment. And we did have an open-ended question to say, well, if you agree or disagree to this question, you know, list that department. And only a few people who even agreed listed a department name. So that was very interesting. And this question, I feel the university environment is safe, peaceful, and accessible for all. Now this one, 52% agreed or strongly agreed that the university campus was safe, which is very significant. And I was very interested in looking at this and comparing this to the white female students. No, I'm sorry, they just not up there. But there was a higher level of white female students who actually said that they were disagreed or strongly disagreed that they felt the university environment was safe. So that's something to look into as well. And then this question is very important because there has been some research done previously with black female graduate students finding that black female graduate students who have strong mentoring relationships, especially with people who are matched on their race and gender, tend to do better, tend to have better psychological health than students who are not in a very tight mentoring relationship. So this question, as you can see, 54% of the respondents agreed or strongly agreed that they have the opportunity for mentorship and networking, which is very significant. So I think this is something that can definitely take another look at this and determine, you know, how are they forming these mentoring relationships and how can we continue to foster these mentoring relationships, because obviously this is a very good, well, time goes by fast. This is a very good thing. This is wonderful. Okay, so the mental distress, the results of the mental health inventory, very similar to what we've previously found. When we looked at the mean score, it was 26. And so for this scale, the scale goes from 5 to 30, with 5 being, yeah, you have really bad psychological distress, to 30 being that you're okay. And so our mean score for the women who completed the survey was 26. And when I looked at that compared to the other women who completed the survey, so there was a few Hispanic women, one Native American woman, and some white women, African American women had the best level of distress. And again, that's very consistent with what we've seen in the literature. And so let me go on to my next slide. I think that leads us to need further research. And because I don't think that means, as a black female graduate student, I know I'm distressed. So, you know, I just think that that means that we need to find another way to assess psychological health for black women. Maybe the scale that we use, people just aren't associating that with, you know, their own mental health as, you know, do you feel down and blue? Well, no, I don't feel down and blue, but I have distress, you know. So doing additional research, doing mixed methods, using some in-depth interviews, focus groups to develop qualitative data, again, how are women perceiving stress, so that we can know how to do a better job of really measuring stress. Also, I think it would be very important to understand the factors that are causing distress. Again, our population was not old, because I'm not old, but it was older than you might think. So, you know, look into that. Also, you know, are women with children having special issues compared to women without children? So looking at those factors that cause distress. Also looking at the current mechanism, since obviously a lot of the women aren't going to counseling services, how are they coping with stress? Whether or not that mentoring relationship really is having a very significant impact, which I think it probably does. And then also looking at the specific mental health information needs and barriers to mental health care. So a little bit more. So the study implications, basically we can use the data that we have to really try to help develop, implement, and evaluate culturally congruent interventions. So again, taking the information back to our counseling services centers, seeing how they can improve their services, how they can improve their visibility to the minorities on campus. Also, again, the mentoring relationship and networking. So we want to engage faculty, staff, and administrators and making sure that they are open to those types of situations. And then also making sure that we have campus counselors who are culturally competent, because I think sometimes that is a major barrier, because if you're going to campus services and you don't see someone who looks like you, you might not feel that they can understand and identify with your problems. So making sure that you have adequate campus adequate training for campus counselors. And then this is something that was interesting that I put up there. Develop like a safe zone for graduate students. You know, they have a safe zone program for LGBT students. But also, you know, like you said, sometimes you have that professor that you just, can't stand, but have a safe zone program, somewhere you can go and vent that frustration as opposed to letting it build up and cause those psychological and physiological problems that can happen. So in conclusion, we found that Black female graduate students actually report lower levels of psychological distress than students of other races. And again, I didn't put the data up there, but I don't know if it was the outlier, but the one Native American student that did complete the survey had the highest levels of psychological distress. I think like her levels of distress were, I think she had like a, basically like a 5. And it was pretty bad. Now, again, I don't know if it's an outlier, but that is something to look into. So looking into assisting students of other races and ethnicities is really important. Again, we found that comfort using campus services is not as common for Black female graduate students, but mentoring networking among Black female graduate students may help to foster resilience to academic stressors. And of course, we want to acknowledge the SCOPE team, Dr. Laura Wilkinson, Dr. Lornoy here in the back, thank you for your support. And of course, acknowledge our sources of funding, the Institute for African American Research was the grant that provided the funds to do this study. And that's it. Thank you.
And this is a conversation that I had with a professor the other day. We were sharing a poster space, and she was doing stress work on African American women, and she's actually trying to develop and validate her own scale for measuring stress, because I just think the scale that is used has been validated as a way to determine psychological stress, but those studies were not focused on African American women, right? So I do think that even though they show here that they experience low levels of stress, I don't think that really reflects the actual reality.
So you think they're not measuring the right thing?
Exactly.
Do you have a sense of what should be measured?
Basically, like for example, this one is feeling, okay, one of the examples is how you felt downhearted and blue in the last week. You know, that doesn't necessarily to me, if I haven't felt downhearted and blue, it doesn't mean that I'm not stressed. So measuring, and then coming up with the qualitative of how can we assess that, because I don't, this isn't my area, so I don't know exactly how to measure it. But I think that doing qualitative studies of determining, again, what are stressing out women, how are they conceptualizing stress, what are the words you're using to describe the stress, can be used to develop an instrument.
If I might add, one thing that, Laurel Wilkinson, that was also on the study, we also did focus groups. We also performed focus groups with pockets of individuals who actually performed the survey as well. And so, just to add to what Michelle already presented, the African American women and African Americans in general had lower psychological distress, but we also used the Ingeborg Bourke psychological well-being mental resilience scale, and they actually had higher scores for psychological well-being. However, when you juxtapose that to the focus groups that we had conducted, I had students come to me even after the focus groups, where can I go because my professor is doing X? Where do we have an African-American woman psychologist in the counseling center? I remember that you discussed that there was one. Is there one? I tried to go there the other day. I got family issues, things of that nature. So our women qualitatively were going through through some things. But the scales didn't identify what they were going through. They might not feel downhearted and blue, but they might feel stressed and anxious. But stressed and anxious isn't an option. So, at least not on the MHI-5. So that, you know, Michelle's theory about, you know, maybe we're not asking the right question, or maybe we're not getting to the right stressors might be the key.
It's a little bit of a comment, and maybe we'll generate further discussion on that point. But I was wondering if you felt like the women in their responding to the survey perhaps felt that they should, as I think the first presenter talked a little bit about that, is that I'm fine. You know, and I can handle it, I can deal with it, so I'm going to say, you know, and respond in this certain way, in addition to perhaps not asking specifically, you know, having an instrument that's specific enough to what they're experiencing, but also if there's a tendency, because I know, I mean, just speaking as a mother, oftentimes I can't allow myself to feel a certain way because I have to operate, you know, in the household and make sure everything's fine, et cetera, et cetera. And so I wonder if that's a component as well that might come out in that. And if they're graduate students and mothers and, you know, there's all these other pieces, maybe they're not allowing themselves to feel that because, you know, I don't know whether that's something that came out in your...
another thing that struck me was the neutral. Because that was a very high number. And when I feel neutral about something, not necessarily feeling great about it.
Right.
And so I, you know, on a life scale, I wonder about that. So was that really, you know, I don't know.
Was that neutral or was that the best place to say I'm not?
Yeah, right. Because those numbers were very high. Your neutral numbers were very high.
I think to speak to that statement about the mom, and in terms of African American women, we have some catchphrases that we use to keep us moving forward and not stall or in place of obstacles. And we talk about strong black women, and we talk about I'm the one who has to handle it all. So like if I don't row this boat, it is not going to float. Mm-hmm. And so in some ways, sometimes you can't rest in that, so that you can keep moving forward. And so sometimes they won't say it. And I think when you talk to them, then you'll hear more words. But initially, even when I did another research project with African American women, it was about increasing physical activity and diet. The first thing they said is, I don't worry about other people and what they say. But if you continue to talk to them, they said, I worry about what my husband says. I worry about what my sister says. And sometimes I won't even tell them what I'm thinking so they don't deter me. So then you tell me, you're worried. So I have to go back to her and talk to her, but I can't tell her you're worried about people because then that means I'm not strong. Mm-hmm. I'm not that person that I'm telling you I am. So there has to be some way to capture them in a way that doesn't, you know, cause them to feel vulnerable and maybe lose their place, remain strong, and kind of an empowerment capture. And some of that may be interviews and more conversation, like focus groups, dialogue, that help them, give them a free place to talk. But I'm not sure, and I think it's so true, and I think that's why our women won't be depressed, because the church folks have, I'm too blessed to be
stressed.
All right. And so then what that usually means is, I'm stressed. But I can't speak it. Okay?
I have a question for you and your study with the church. You said that they didn't necessarily have to be a member, they just had to have been there one time to find out. I wonder if it would be different if you also looked at those that were regular members.
We didn't in this particular, because we do have church attendance and number of times attended. Na is my wonderful statistician and she keeps me straight with the statistics, but she has looked at other data in terms of church attendance. And that was in terms of physical activity just yesterday, the other day, and it didn't matter. But we do have that data in terms of how often they attend church.
But I mean, overwhelmingly, like 95% attended church. Sure. But to your question, is there a dose between church attendance and depression?
Right. And like a once versus three times a month.
Right.
And we expect that. And so we've got some spiritual instruments that are in our data as well. And as we move forward with the same population, we have some other spiritual, because we want to capture that, because we're looking at counseling now and want to capture what that may mean for this group.
My question is for the first speaker. You had mentioned in the introduction that you had some sort of anecdotal feedback about how women responded when you on the spot or followed up with a letter with, you know, you scored at risk for depression. I'm really interested in hearing some of those anecdotes or hearing about some of those responses, what you were hearing when you were presenting them with that feedback.
And that would be Dr. McNeil, who that they had a direct line of communication with the principal investigator, and they used it.
Yeah, so not everyone was happy to get the little letter in the mail saying that, you know, we screened your, assessee, and it looks like they maybe went out of our way to make it seem a little more benign, because obviously kind of saying, you know, this screen of said that you're at risk for depression was going to have a negative response, so we kind of, it was even more toned down. But, you know, anecdotally through our advisory board and so forth, learned that a lot of people weren't necessarily, you know, happy. Not the vast majority, but some people. One person in particular wrote me a letter and mailed it, and I got the letter, and I opened it up, and they wanted me to know that they weren't really depressed. But what was going on was they wanted a house, and they had a lot of things going on in their life, and actually wanted me to go in the database and change their score so that they were no longer identified as being depressed and put a caveat that said, you know, but I'm kind of going through things, so if you can, you know, make that notation.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, another person similarly called me on the telephone after they got their letter to kind of explain that they had some other chronic problems. And I think what was interesting is that you should probably be feeling that way if you're, you know, downlisted three times a week or you have some chronic condition. And so it's not a negative thing that you're going through. That just says, you know, that you are going through some things and might need some additional support. But, you know, seeing that and having that label placed on
them. Do you think that's a cultural response to the label and that's different within the Black community?
I mean, Jack, you could speak more on the generality of like how the label. I know that these particular folks who reached out to me had an objection to that label.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, the same. I think it probably there's several things with the label. The other thing is their faith, and so sometimes to war with something like that when they have a God that's big or great, they should not be here. And why am I here? So then that maybe help them question their faith or something like that. I think it's just a myriad of things, and I really couldn't put my finger on it without going back to as a researcher, going back to the.
We had a comment in the back.
I'll let her go first.
And I have a question
for
a gentleman from so there was a big article this week in the Post about the community in Prince George's County faced with all Black men. What is your assessment of, you know, the protective factors of being in an all-Black enclave and also being at home? Do you think that's going to be, can that be protective in the long term for a space?
I think that's a great question. One of my dissertation committee members does a lot of work in this. She's a sociologist by the name of Karen Lacey. She wrote a book called Lucha in Black.
Yeah.
And so that book is about PG County. And it describes some of the cultural institutions that parents who were more affluent consciously placed their children into to protect them. So things like Jack and Jill, certain Boy Scout, Girl Scout troops, but they were specifically around certain areas. So a lot of times in cities, you'll see two chapters of a Boy Scout troop or even a Jack and Jill troop. So there is a conscious outcome. She found that it was. I mean, she didn't really look at health outcomes, though. So, but I think that I think there's some work that looks at psychological distress and things like that. It's not depression, but it seems to be somewhat protective. I think the issue is it when it's an enclave of that, what you're describing, and then does it stay that way? And that's what we see And that's something I'm very interested in. I think that's something that even the speaker can kind of mean to properly address in saying that how it should as well. So I think that's a real issue.
I think it's this is more of a comment. I think it's important to understand the compare and contrast structure of those who, at least in our study, we're taking a survey and on a larger scale, African Americans as a whole. You mentioned having kids and being strong for the kids. Or if you are an African American student, graduate student in our study, and you're, let's say, I'm thinking of one story in particular, a student, a female student, had a fiance. Her fiance was going through extreme bouts of racism. He was the only African American in his cohort, in his program, and to the point where he was almost being kicked out of school for doing when everything was adjudicated and going to the ombuds person, absolutely nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing was made of it. As a matter of fact, he stayed in and graduated. So, but she was going through extreme amounts of stress for him, but she could not admit that she was worried or scared or concerned because, you know, she was being strong for him. So when I think about other African American women who I also interviewed and did focus groups with, you know, they were too blessed to be stressed, so to speak, because they're comparing contrast, their sisters were going through, you know, pregnancies and things of that nature without being wedded. Their families were going through complete financial stressors, but they were in graduate school and somewhat protected with health insurance when their family cohort didn't have it. Their cousins were going through certain other things too. So from a comparative structure, they are up here. But the rest of the people who they sort of left behind are, you know, sort of underclassed or not where they are. And so when we think about someone in PG County or something of that nature, it can be protected. And especially if you have left the low class or low socioeconomic status, so to speak, and you are the one individual, and again, this was only 84 women. So of those 84 women, thinking about the demographics of South Carolina, these 84 women, a lot of whom could be in state, are the ones who are succeeding or going against the grain, against some of the barriers that are presented to them. So they don't have, as the other presenter said, they have to row this boat or this boat ain't gonna float. Yeah. They don't have time to sit up there and feel downhearted or blue or some of the other scoring that was on there. And they don't feel, and they feel guilty if they did feel downhearted and blue or down about their circumstance, because there are so many others who are in worse circumstances than they are. Mm-hmm. So that's important to keep in mind.
Yes. Michelle, I'm betting that if we had asked specific year of matriculation, as in, are you a first year master's or first year doctoral or fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, infinity year doctoral, you know, I bet that lower stress would be significant even among the years, especially at USC for African American graduate students, because we don't see, in many cases, as many professors that look like us. I'm wondering what kinds of things we would have seen had we been very specific in that kind of demographic information.
Personally, I don't think it would have been that significant a difference because of the scale that was used. I think having used a more appropriate scale, there would definitely be a difference. I think it's a scale.
Yes. Yeah, I had a question for the first speaker again. Very interesting. Could you comment on the relative contribution of, so for example, on your social support scale, the three? I'm just sort of wondering, you know, it's very interesting to find out how, you know, social support is important as a protective factor in depression, but which component
I'm not sure, and I might defer to Nah in just a moment. I'm not sure if I could absolutely tell which factor was. I thought maybe when I looked at it in terms of my programming as a statistician, I had some statistics, some of it I've forgotten. But when I looked at it, I felt like I tangible and appraisal felt like it was better for people. Now, I'm going to defer to Nah if I can, and I'm going to hand her the paper. In terms of social support, is there one subscale that may be more important than the other in terms of a protective factor?
I think they are very close together. Yes,
similar.
Mm-hmm. Based on we have official 482, and then belonging is 481, and temporal is 482.
Yeah. They were really quite close.
I would just add that for the scope study, the African Americans who participated in the scope study scored extremely high, significantly higher, way significantly higher than other Caucasian graduate students for day-to-day discrimination and for lifetime discrimination. So that was a great contradiction that we found in some of the other studies that we were also publishing, where for African Americans, their day-to-day and lifetime discrimination was significantly higher, but so was their psychological well-being, and their distress was lower. So we just couldn't, you know, that's an extreme contradiction. You go through more discrimination, but you cope through it or you're resilient through it more.
Isn't discrimination a part of
African Americans? It is.
Whether you're on campus or
in the
neighborhood, you just take it where it is.
You just take it where it is and accept it, and you go. Well, it didn't turn out to be the stressor that we thought
you expected.
Exactly. We were either made stronger from it, or we coped with it better, mm-hmm. and we overcome
you
it,
cope,
and then that
you
might
have to cope.
And then
you
that might lead to. Greater psychological well-being.
And psychological distress is about the expectation and your reality. So if I expect to be discriminated again, then today is no different. What's the matter?
So if
my expectation is to have a better experience, then I'm distressed. So if you say I wanted to get a great birthday gift and you don't get the gift you want, you're upset. So if you expected nothing, you're good. It's a good day. So the expectation is discrimination, and I'm going to stop there.
Thank you all for coming.